We're back. The Nordic Leaders podcast comes roaring back and goes global for season 5 with the theme of Fail Smart, lessons in leadership and life.
We still have conversations that matter with extraordinary people based in the Nordics.
And we speak to experts and thought leaders globally from Abu Dhabi to Zimbabwe.
In our most popular pods, our guests open up about themselves, what they've learned along the way, and with the courage to talk about setbacks.
Indeed, the stuff that didn't quite work out how they intended, but how they came back stronger and wiser.
So, all the best elements of the Nordic Leaders podcast are still there, but there's a few extra questions about the ups and downs of life.
So join us, David, Nick and Stefano, as we explore failing smart with our hyper-successful guests.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, connect with any of us on LinkedIn, and 5-star ratings, they're okay if you like what you hear.
Indeed, 5-star ratings are okay. Let's get started with Fail Smart.
Nitin, welcome to the Nordic Leaders podcast. It might be that in this season called Fail Smart with you, we're going to concentrate more on the smart than on the fail, but welcome.
Thank you very much. No, it's lovely to be here.
I was reading a Guardian article the other day about you that began by saying it's easier to list the things that Nitin Sawhney can't do than he can do. So it's going to be tough to get this intro in, but I'm going to give it a shot. As a composer, producer and musician, Nitin is recipient of over 20 international rewards. I'll start that again.
I've had lots of rewards as well. This is one of them, evidently.
It's probably gone on to up to 21 now, DG, given the time you're taking with this intro.
This is why it's called Fail Smart. As a composer, producer and musician, Nitin is a recipient of over 20 international awards, a CBE, an Ivor Novello Lifetime Achievement Award, 7 independent honorary doctorates and has scored over 60 films, including Warner Brothers' Mowgli for Netflix. Numerous TV series, including the BBC's Epic Human Planet series, made over 20 studio albums, 11 under his own name, his most recent being Immigrants, released through Sony Masterworks, and has also scored extensively for theatre, dance and video games. Nitin is currently the Chair of Trustees for the PRS Foundation, the UK's leading charitable funder of new music and talent development, and an Ivors Academy Director. He's a member of the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences and BAFTA. Nitin has served as a member and appointed advisory committee to the UK Government on National Musical Educational Policy. He's an associate artist with London's Sadler's Wells dance venue, and he served as trustee on numerous boards, including London's Somerset House and the Whitechapel Art Gallery. Nitin's currently a trustee on the board of London theatre company Complicité. And I might just throw in collaborations and productions include work with Paul McCartney, I think I've heard of him, Sting, Jeff Beck, Ellie Goulding, Annie Lennox, Will Young, Bob Geldof, Andy Serkis, Mira Nair, Anushka Shankar, wow, Nora Jones, Herbie Hancock, David Gilmour, and Nelson Mandela. What do you do after lunch?
What do I do after lunch? Sleep normally. So, yeah, do you want me to respond to that? Or was that a rhetorical question?
Totally up to you. A really good starting point for today would be just to explore what's brought you along this path. In our Fail Smart series, we're curious to hear a little bit about any setbacks, the challenges that you had to overcome and made you stronger. I finished.
I think there's a lot to say to all of that. There's a lot in that question, and there's a lot more in the answer, in that it's been a very long journey, and sometimes it's been quite arduous, but most of the time it's been wonderful. And the reason is because I started off my professional career studying. I studied law at Liverpool University and didn't really get on with that because I found myself playing a lot of music, not focusing too much on wanting to be a lawyer. To be honest, at that stage, I was at university just to be at university. And I think it was only afterwards that I then qualified as an accountant, of all things. I found that was difficult for me because, again, it was suppressing a lot of my creativity. But then I found it very useful as well because it gave me a much more pragmatic side than I'd ever had before. The difficulty with all of that was that I just wasn't getting enough time to explore my creative side. So in the end, I had to really make a choice, and I took a big leap of faith and went and joined my friend's band, the James Taylor Quartet. And I'd known James from school, and I started touring with him. And I'd had a very good friend from school as well, who I'd known for a long time, who quite often I'd ask for advice or I'd share thoughts with. His name was Andrew Jones, who's also a friend of yours, David.
Yes.
You knew
him
very well too.
Yeah, and of course I knew and, James Taylor as well. I saw him play in Finland once in 89 in Tampere. In Finland.
Oh, there you go. It was around that time that I was actually playing with him. So it was interesting. Yeah, we'd grown up at school together, and he was somebody who I just thought had real drive to what he did. And he was always a very driven person at school, but he was driven as a band leader. And I found that very inspiring. The difficulty, of course, in leaving a job where I was financial controller of a hotel at that time, which was a very well-paid job, and I was doing well, and I was quite happy with what I was doing in one sense, but I didn't feel really fulfilled, as I was saying, creatively. So I walked out of my job, and suddenly it dawned on me that I had no real way of making money. I toured with James for a while and got paid for doing that, but it didn't really sustain for very long. So suddenly to go from a pretty good salary to virtually nothing, and then to try to re-kickstart a career in music was quite scary.
Was there a specific catalyst? You said that you took a leap of faith. You just walked out. I'm picturing you walking out this hotel now, walking towards your guitar.
Exactly what happened. Effectively, and literally in many ways. But yeah. I think what happened was that I felt that I needed to follow my bliss. I needed to really follow what my intuition was saying, which is that ultimately I was a musician. And I believed that, in a way it's hard to explain, but I tend to think that if you do follow your intuition, the universe has a habit of taking care of you. And that's something that I really feel has happened to me through my career. I've always trusted my intuition. But then again, as I do believe that you have to train your intuition and work on your intuition to the point where you do feel able to trust it. And in that respect, I'd spent many years practicing guitar, piano, learning how to play them well, and also learning a lot as a composer and understanding that craft to the point where I felt I could trust my intuition as a musician, and I felt I was good enough to do that. So it wasn't that I was going out there with no ability or no knowledge of what I could do. I felt that I was a good enough player and musician to be able to do that.
So you mentioned our late friend, Andrew Jones, Andy.
Yeah.
Were there some specific moments along the way that gave a boost to your intuition that made it clearer to you what that following your bliss would look like?
Yeah, I think it was that financially it was difficult for a long time. I think I slept on lots of floors. I was not very anchored anywhere. I didn't want to ask anyone for help because I was determined to make it on my own. And I did think that my intuition would only reap me rewards without the benefit of a safety net. So I tended to think I need to really throw myself into this fully. And I was determined not to go back to accountancy or freelancing even in order to get by. And it's something I think watching Andy, I felt very inspired by his journey because I'd known him from a teenager, and I'd watched him one day come home from work. I'd turned up at his house. We were due to jam one day. And I remember seeing him literally so frustrated that he started kicking objects around the room, and he was so upset about his life and about his work that he just felt that he was so unfulfilled that he didn't really know what he could do with himself, and he didn't really know what his future might bring. And I think seeing that frustration and then how he rose from that was a great inspiration to me. So I guess in that he followed his bliss and he followed his intuition, and he eventually over time went through many jobs and many incarnations in terms of who he was and what he was into. But he always seemed to land on his feet. And watching that happen, I just thought, you know what? It's going to be all right. So whatever you do, if you do it wholeheartedly, things have a habit of turning out okay. And so that's really what I took as a philosophy and continued to work with. And it got me in a hell of a lot of trouble financially for quite a while. It got me to the point where I was really hugely overdrawn. And the figure I will hit you with is £250,000 at one point, which the bank was prepared to write off totally. And I said, I don't want you to write it off. I'm going to pay back every penny of that, because it was because I'd found myself, I won't go into the ins and outs of it because I'm not really supposed to, but it was a long time ago. And I had a bit of a legal battle with a record company for a while, which I won't go into, but that left me in a lot of debt for a while. And again, it was only when I let go and stopped fighting and stopped being angry and frustrated and instead looked at what I could do positively to change things that everything shifted. And it shifted really fast, within a matter of weeks, in fact. And I was able to get into a situation where I got a new record deal. I was able to find new film work. I was suddenly, instead of being £250,000 overdrawn, I had enough money in the bank to be able to put down a huge deposit on a house. I was suddenly in a very good position, and it changed very fast. And I'd gone from playing to maybe 100 people at the Jazz Cafe to suddenly filling the Royal Albert Hall and playing to 5,000 people and selling it out, and then touring with Sting, and then all kinds of things happened for me very fast. And I do believe completely that it was a change of attitude. It was because I focused on what I could positively do rather than what I could retain from the past. And what I mean by that is I was fighting people who were trying to keep me in the past, and I was trying to move on. And instead of fighting those people, I just simply moved on. And then the fight just vanished. It was no longer there. And it sounds quite, in some ways, it sounds a bit amorphous to say this, or I'm not really, it sounds a bit vague.
It sounds quite Taoist to me, that it's being open to what emerges and letting go. I think what I hear in common between you and Andy Jones is courage there. And Andy was also somebody who was prepared to operate without a safety net. But Nick, what are you hearing?
Lost. This thing about moving from angry to positive, and the idea that people trying to keep me in the past. This is what made you step forward into the future?
I think it was an epiphany moment, actually, because I was genuinely worn down. And I thought, I got to a point where I literally took out a piece of paper and just listed down what it was that was making me feel bad and what it was that was making me feel good. And that I was astonished by how big the side that was making me feel bad was. That list was very long. There wasn't much that was making me feel good. And I thought, how do I change that? Because I kind of literally hadn't seen it in black and white like that. And I thought, this is to actually just look at a piece of paper and see how much in the negative I was in every sense. I just thought, I need to do something totally different from whatever I've been doing. And so I literally just went, what can I do? What are the things that I'm capable of? What are the things that I could do to change my situation? What do I have control of? Which is really important, because the thing is, it's very easy to believe the people who want you to feel you can't control anything. And it's in certain people's interest sometimes to make you feel that way. And that's what I realized was going on, is that I was being made to feel powerless, and that the only way I could change things was to actually believe in my own power. And so I think that was the epiphany moment, literally just listing things down on a piece of paper gave me a new sense of purpose and also gave me a new sense of drive.
Lovely. So drive and purpose came from that list. Lists still work, don't they? Even today, even in this digital world, I think people are still making effective lists, which is good news for quite old-fashioned people like me. Listening to David's intro today and looking at Stefano and Knitting, listening to that intro, I was just wondering, what's it like being Knitting Sawney today?
I feel very in that all the things, and it's a very bold statement, but it's a true one. All the things that I've ever wanted to happen have happened. And I remember being interviewed in Australia a few years ago, and they said, you know, what would you like to do next? And I said, there's lots of things I'd like to do. There's plenty of things, but I don't feel like I've missed out on anything. I feel that all the things that I wanted have actually happened. So if I drop dead tomorrow, I'd drop dead knowing that I've had the kind of life I wanted. So from that point of view, I can't complain about anything, really. I feel incredibly privileged, and that's why I try to work with charitable organisations and work with other people and try to collaborate and try to share some of those feelings with others to hopefully help other people out. Just literally before this started, I was just with a young composer who'd asked for a meeting with me, and I just went out for lunch with him, and he was asking how to get started and so on. And there was a lot in what he was saying that reminded me of my early days and how to get a foot on the ladder and how do you start, because this is a very competitive industry. The music industry is very difficult to get into on every level. And so I feel privileged in that I get to work across just about every medium. I work with film, I work with television, dance, make albums, produce people, DJ, whatever. And all of those things, each of those things has been very successful for me. So it's talking about all of that and talking about diversifying as a musician. And also one of the things that I was saying to him, because he wants to get into writing for films and video games, is that I said part of it is being a musician, but it's also about being into literature, being into narrative, being into storytelling, being into journeys, so that you can work with other people from different mediums. So when you ask me what it's like to be me, I would say that it's fantastic because I get to collaborate with amazing people. I get to work in the way that I want to. I have autonomy. I make my own decisions about how my life goes. I'm very blessed in that I make good money from what I do. And I also have the privilege of working with young people and helping them to achieve their goals. Just about everything I could possibly say in terms of positivity in my career has gone very well, and my personal life is also pretty great, but I won't talk too much about that.
Nitin, thank you for that lovely answer. You said about feeling lucky. I wonder what you think about luck.
Yeah, I think music attracts luck because music for me, okay, is about communing with the universe. I do believe that. If you look at Beethoven in 1816, when he was 46 years old, he was totally deaf. But at the same time, he was capable of, he came up with his best stuff during that time. He wrote down, we were talking about lists earlier, he wrote down words like ether. He wrote down words from Hinduism. He wrote down all kinds of strange words that showed that he was trying to connect with his inner spirituality. And I think that music at its best is actually a way of connecting. I'm not religious or anything, but I do feel that it connects you to the universe. I feel it gives you direct input to the way in which the universe works. There's lots of scientists who've talked about this. I mean, Pythagoras talked about it in Music of the Spheres, and Johannes Kepler talked about it with the Harmonices Mundi. You have this kind of whole history of people exploring the relationship of the planets and the way in which the universe. And I don't want to get too pretentious or out there with things, but I do believe that a lot of musicians and artists recognize that when you let go and when you let your musical intuition take over, then you're led to amazing places. Einstein himself said that relativity came to him through his musical intuition, which I find fascinating, that something that is so much about mathematics and so much about physics was arrived at through what he described as his musical intuition. Of course, he was a great violinist. And so I kind of do think that when you talk about luck, I've had a great many coincidences in my life, and some of which I've talked about even in one-man shows and so on. And I think a lot of those coincidences have come out, pretty much all of them, have come about through music and my connection to music.
Wow. And just something you said, when you let go, then maybe the magic happens. And there's a brilliant link that we'll put in the podcast notes, which relates to artists, musicians, composers, whom you have worked with. And they say lots of great things in this video. They say something about you enabling them to be more than what they imagine themselves to be, to go a little bit further, that sense of letting go. So it sounds like clearly you've been doing that yourself, but somehow you've been helping others to explore that side of themselves. How do you do that?
I think, well, They're being very generous, first of all. In the videos that you've seen, there are a number of people that I've collaborated with and worked with over time who are very generous and kind in their words. But I would say that those people are like that themselves. I try to work with people who are very open, who are interested in collaboration, in a sense of wanting to share ideas and being open to conversations and establishing a unified sense of purpose. And I think that has worked very well with all those people who are in the video because of their nature, being open. And I think that's the thing. One thing I would say is choose your collaborators well. Because if you choose the wrong person or the wrong institution or whatever to collaborate with, you can find your own identity being suppressed in a way that takes away your power. And perhaps because I have an awareness of what it feels like to be powerless from many different situations, going back to childhood to the present day, I would say that I'm acutely aware of it. I'm acutely aware of power imbalances in the way in which you work with people. And so I'm always very careful about that and very measured in ensuring that the people that I do work with feel valued, that they feel that they are as much a part of the process as I am, and if not more, and that we can work together towards a common goal in the way that doesn't interrupt each other's flow, but instead enhances each other's flow, and we find a flow together. And I think that comes through initial conversations. It comes through bringing each other's thoughts and processes and perceptions of what goals we might have, or whether we want to just simply explore a possibility rather than focus on a specific goal. So it's just kind of, it's about seeing how people want to work and being open to that. And that always creates the kinds of results that I enjoy. And hopefully it seems that other people do as well.
So there's a bit of luck there, but also a lot of conscious agency as well. You said choose your collaborators carefully. So maybe it's both. So I have to throw a quote in every episode. So my quote is from the Tao Te Ching, and it's, when I let go of what I am, I become what I might be.
It's an excellent quote. I think it's a brilliant quote, David.
Oh, thank you. No, nobody else has ever said that.
It's one of your most appropriate quotes, definitely, yeah. given what we've been talking about today. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
I wonder, Stefano, what's on your mind right now? What have you heard so far?
Yeah, I've been really fascinated by everything that Nitin said, and I was trying to find the connection between the many different episodes that we have recorded in the past, and there's a lot of connection with the improvisation that we have explored in the past. There's a lot of connection with agency, which also we have explored in the past, and I found very courageous what you have described, Nitin, and being able to let go. It's of course liberatory to some extent, but it can also be dangerous and a jump in the void to some extent sometimes. It's very courageous and inspirational. I would also want to say that I found your words very inspirational as well. And yeah, it's been really a pleasure to listen to you, and that's why I was so silent, which I am not usually.
One thing I'd say that to add to David's quote is, when you talk about improvisation, you mentioned improvisation earlier, and one of the most inspiring quotes, although I'll probably paraphrasing it, is John Coltrane, who said that improvisation was like a bird that you catch in the air. And again, that kind of lends itself to this idea of bring music or discovering rather than creating, which I find also really fascinating, is this notion that it's what Michelangelo famously said, that the statues were hidden in the stone. And this idea that we're not necessarily always the agents of what is out there, but perhaps we're just literally just coming across what is already there and allowing it to manifest through us. So that's I guess what I mean by following your intuition, because I think the more you follow your intuition, the more you end up in a place where you're able to be a medium for possibility.
I'm still very curious, Nitin, if I might jump in, about that creative process. And I love the way that you said that you enhance each other's flow with your collaborators, and also that awareness of the power dynamics. How do you do that in practice? The lunch that you just had with a young aspiring musician, there is clearly a power imbalance there in that situation. So what do you do to make sure that you are equal in the collaborative moment?
One thing I would say is humour. Humour's good, because if you actually share a joke, or just, and it's something actually I noticed Nelson Mandela did, where the power difference was phenomenal.
So what's Nelson's favourite joke? Tell us.
No, it was more that he had a humour to him when I met him. And actually, it was really interesting, because when I spoke to him before we started the interview, because I was lucky enough to interview him in his house in Johannesburg many years ago in 2001. And I remember I'd just finished the book Long Walk to Freedom, which I'd finished the last page in his garden. And, and I literally walked into his house and there he was. And I was acutely aware that he'd been not only a lawyer in his early life, but also a boxer. And he had an imposing physique. And he came across as powerful in many ways. Knowing his history in itself meant that you were aware of the power of the man. And so what he did, because I think he was aware of that, was he did, like Paul McCartney does and like Sting does, a lot of people who know that when you're meeting them, there is definitely a power imbalance. They know that intuitively. I don't mean as human beings. If you are talking about music or you're talking about a career in music, then definitely there's a power imbalance with Paul McCartney or Sting. If you're talking to Nelson Mandela on just about anything, there's a power imbalance, because he's probably one of the greatest human beings who's ever lived. So in that respect, it was very interesting. And I'll tell you what he did that blew my mind in terms of dispelling that difference, was that he was talking to me, and his PA came into the room at one point, and they called him Madiba. And they said, Madiba, the president's on the phone to speak to you. And he looked at me and he said, how many more questions have you got? And I said, two or three. And he turned around to her and said, would you ask him to call me back in 10 minutes? And now for me, I nearly burst into tears with that. And I'll tell you why. It's because I'd read his speech at Riviona, where he'd said that he stood for the struggles of not just black South Africans, but all people, and against oppression. And I never believed that kind of thing. I'm quite cynical. I think, yeah, this is political stuff. It's stuff that he said because he was a leader and he needed to say these things. But in that moment, I thought, this is a true egalitarian. This is somebody who actually valued the person in front of him as much as a president. He was quite happy to put the president back and say, yeah, get him to call me back. And from that point of view, it was a moment of realizing that if you are the person who is in a position of power, as long as you see the person in front of you as equal to yourself, if not more than yourself, that power imbalance with a simple conversation is going to just vanish. And you're able to collaborate in a way that is free-flowing and relaxed, and not about that power dynamic, which it can very easily become.
So you're meeting people human to human, person to person.
Absolutely, always, yeah.
All of equal worth.
There was a scene, sorry, David, I'm just going to jump in. I just did something this week with a leadership team from the film Invictus. Showed them that clip. You've probably seen it with Matt Damon and Morgan Freeman, about how Mandela meted and greeted, respected, and, yeah, showed compassion for everybody.
Share a cup of tea together.
That's right.
Yeah. Did you have tea with Nelson?
I did, indeed, in his place. It's also interesting that he had noticed the power dynamic with other people. Because, for example, when he met with Margaret Thatcher, who had actually labelled him as a terrorist, she kept him waiting for a long time. And, of course, he was aware of that. He'd come to England and he knew that was... But then he did a lot to try to dispel that kind of, because he was a very self-aware human being. He was somebody who was also incredibly empathic. So he knew straight away that what she thought of him and that she had this opinion. So he did a lot in the conversation he had with her, rather than resenting her for doing that and making it into a power struggle, he actually instead recognized that she in some ways felt that he was a person he believed he wasn't, and that he wanted to actually, in his actions and his behavior, challenge her perception of him rather than actually confronting her with her bad behavior towards him. And I think that really also informed that way of thinking, informed what he did when he came out of prison, because instead of looking for revenge on the people who'd put him there for 27 years of his life, 19 of which were in solitary confinement, and it'd be very easy to resent all those people, he looked for ways to move positively forward so that he could really find a new South Africa that was going to be forgiving and thoughtful about how the future could work. And he actually repeatedly said that the future of South Africa is the children of South Africa. And that's who he was looking to. He wasn't really interested in old politicians who were hanging on to old gripes and old problems. He was looking to the future all the time.
I think that's something about the true nature of leadership and power. One of the things about true power is that the most powerful person is the person who actually has the most power to give rather than to take power, but is the person who has the most, is the most empowering or giving power. Stefano, I'm sorry, I jumped on top of you there.
I was saying that the future orientation and the letting go of the past, which keeps coming back in your words, Nitin, is something which I find and always found extremely powerful. We tend to dwell on the past and think about how we will seek revenge, but then it's so much more powerful to look at the future and see how we can play on our strengths and our other people's strengths as well to make something better, rather than just looking back and trying to fix stuff which is not fixable because it's in the past already. Yeah, it's a very powerful thought. Thanks for giving that to us.
Nitin, is there something you would like to ask us? It's a bit one-way traffic, us bombarding you. Three against one, jumping on.
Yes, of course. I'd love to know, and as I mentioned to you before, David, I'd love to know more about the leadership work that you do. And also, Nick, all three of you, really. How has that worked for you? How do you define a leader? That's a question I'd like to ask all three of you.
That's a great question. One thing that you just said, one way that is often useful to explore it is that a leader is somebody who offers you a vision of a better future. People want to have leaders that offer hope and optimism and a better future. And that's exactly what you were talking about with Nelson Mandela. And instead of dwelling on his coming out and thinking, well, that wasn't very fair, didn't enjoy that very much, look what the universe has done to me, he thought about the future.
Yeah, that's very good. Yeah, thank you. Nick, what about you?
There was this Gallup poll, I think, done in the States in 2009, and they interviewed 10,000 employees of North American companies, and they said, what is it? What makes you follow a leader? And these four words came up again and again, and it was hope, trust, compassion, and stability. So hope of something better in future. If we all work together, we can move towards this thing, whatever it is, and that's going to be great. Compassion, that whoever is called a leader or whoever is being followed sees the other person. I see you. I understand you. I see what good you do, and I see the stuff that's not so good, and I'm going to tell you about it. If that's okay, I'm going to give you honest, direct feedback, because that's going to help you and I care about you. And stability, I think, is important these days because there is so much change. This kind of ADHD world, as some might describe it. Actually, what doesn't change, I think, is quite important. So, Stefano, what's the right answer?
I've been exploring now lately the power of listening as a leader. Very often, leaders are perceived as the ones that tell people stuff or tell people what to do. Very rarely leaders are the ones who are perceived as the ones listening, actually. But it's extremely powerful to give full attention to anyone, because from there you can really understand people. So I reconnect with the compassion that Nick mentioned, and then connect that understanding of the person to the vision that of the future that you have as a leader. So yeah, listening definitely is a characteristic which I really appreciate in leaders. And through that, helping people grow. So that's my building on top of what Nick and David have said.
Yeah, different voices and listening, I think, is such a key part.
So Nitin, what do you triangulate from those three answers? You often are in a leadership position when you're putting the bands together. So what resonates for you?
It's interesting because Stefano's talking about listening and you have to listen empathically. But what, of course, the two things go hand in hand. And the way in which you listen, you need to employ hope, compassion, stability, and trust in a way. Those are the fit that you're filtering, you're listening, filtering the inputs of what you're hearing through those different qualities, hopefully, or those will come into effect in the way that you're listening, because obviously you're engendering trust in being empathic and compassionate in the way you're listening. And also you're trying to perhaps have a two-way situation in your listening, in that you quite often, when I'm working with people, we are looking to see what we can create, and what sense with the album Immigrants, we were looking to see what hopeful messages or ideas could come out, not necessarily messages, because I didn't want to make a didactic album. But when I was working with, for example, Ayanna Witter Johnson, who's a young black fantastic cellist and singer, I wanted her to really speak from her heart and her experiences. And I'd already written this piece of music, but I wanted her to find her voice within it. So it was a lot through the conversations. And so I would say that I think that those aspects of what you're talking about in terms of leadership, I totally agree with. Hope, compassion, stability, and trust are great qualities that I would aspire to in the way that I interact with people. And listening is a prerequisite of finding a collaborative voice with anyone. Otherwise, you're really going to end up imposing your own personality and identity on a situation without being analytical or assessing what is going on in the first place, so that you can optimize the result of your interaction. And I think that's really important. And also that anyone can be a leader at any time. This is a very important thing to me, because you can be working with a guitarist who, maybe I've spent my whole life playing the guitar, but I might meet a guitarist who's actually only played for a short time, but they could teach me something. And so it's very important that you can give way to them and allow them to lead a situation so that you can learn from it. If you're walking in thinking that you know everything there is to know, then you're deluded, because there is no one who knows everything there is to know about anything. You can always learn. There is always something that you can find. And so the idea that you are thinking of leadership in a fluid way in your interactions, I think, is also really important.
You can always learn something. That's nice. It's coming from you.
I like that idea of thinking about your interactions in a fluid way. So there is a dynamism there as well that is propelling the creative impulse there too, with that fluidity. And maybe that's one challenge that many leaders that we work with suffer from, is that they have a quite fixed idea around their position, their role, and also what's happening in the organisation. And so then the conversations become dry and formulaic. And pretty much every client that I work with says we need more creativity and innovation in the organization.
What I was thinking is that the openness to the other experiences, it's something that, it's where creativity starts, essentially. If you're closed and you're so convinced that, as Nitin says, you already know everything that needs to be known, or that even your reality is the true reality, then it's, there's little creativity that you can create from there, because there is no openness.
So we're coming to the top of the hour. How are you doing, Nitin, for time? Do you have 5 minutes still to finish off? Is that okay?
Cool. Yeah, no, I'm with you guys. Whatever you need to do.
Yeah.
Do you want me to say some stuff?
Basically, you have to say yes to that, don't you? Because otherwise you're not doing a Nelson Mandela.
I'm totally. I'm really enjoying this conversation. It's great.
I'll pull a Nelson Mandela.
Nitin, David, can I change just something that still, I know Stefano's picked up on this a few times during this conversation, the idea of letting go, which is a song from one of Nitin's albums, which I love. How much does that song relate to what you were talking about earlier?
100%. It was about that. I wrote that, again, collaboratively with Tina Grace for the album Beyond Skin. It's called Letting Go. And it was literally about what we're saying, the idea of... And in order to let go, you need to feel all of those things that you mentioned. You need to feel a sense of trust. You can't let go without trusting that you're going to land somewhere that is safe or better than where you are. Because otherwise, why would you let go? You just end up clinging on and being intransigent in the way you think. But then also, there is a sense of hope to let go. You need to feel hopeful that something is going to happen that is going to enhance your life in some way and maybe enhance the situation or enhance the lives of others. And then you need to feel compassion in letting go, I think, because actually when you do let go of the past, you need to feel compassion for yourself, which is something I've learned from therapy. In order to let go of the past, you need to actually feel compassionate towards the person that you were. And that's been a difficult journey for me. And then stability, to let go, is difficult because you often feel that the place that you're in is the most stable place to be. It's very difficult to walk away from somewhere that feels familiar or from a situation that you have found yourself in for a long time, because maybe it's not the best place for you to be, but you actually find yourself feeling most secure in it because you're just used to it. And so I think to let go, sometimes you need to destabilize yourself for a while at least. And I think it's actually having the courage to do that. I guess letting go relates to all of those things that you mentioned.
Wonderful. Thank you.
So was it Beyond Skin? That was when you had the 250k debt.
Yeah, around that time. Yeah. And actually, it's weird because that album ended up being my most successful album. Yeah, it was during that time that I was going through the worst time I'd ever been through. And it took 2 years to make, and it was largely made in my bedroom. I did collaborate with other people outside, but it was just literally me with... I didn't even really have a computer. I had a sampler and I had a very kind of mediocre recording device and a kind of makeshift desk. What was quite funny about that is I used a stereo system instead of... you can't see it all, but I've got... Actually, you probably can in the reflection. You might be able to see some speakers. But I've got huge speakers now and lots of... I've got four different sets of speakers I'm listening through to when I'm making music. But when I was working in my bedroom, it was literally a stereo system. And the way I'd do things is I'd reference CDs that I liked. So it was quite a simple way to do things. But what was funny was that there was a hi-fi magazine or something that talked about the sound quality of Beyond Skin and how good it was. And in my next contract for my next album, I had a clause in there that said it had to be at the sound quality.
It had to be done in your bedroom.
And I thought, yeah, basically it had to be at that same standard as I'd achieved in my bedroom with a stereo system and crap equipment. So it was kind of, which made me laugh, because that's the thing. So I think you can find, if you focus enough. And I think that was the thing. I was pretty depressed during that time when I was making Beyond Skin, but I turned that into a lot of focus, creative, and I think that really helped me make the album that I wanted to make.
Thank you so much, Nitin, for sharing all those stories with us. It's Friday afternoon. I feel that we should be minded to let you go. Maybe the question I wanted to ask was, where does the drive still come from? You clearly have a safety net these days. You said if you drop dead tomorrow, you'd be happy. Or I'm paraphrasing.
You might be. Yeah.
I might have. It's Friday afternoon, even later here as well. So maybe we should just end on that note. But
no, I think that might be the wrong note to end on. I don't know what we'd be encouraging with that.
No. What's next?
Yeah, I guess the... Next for me, I suppose the thing is that I feel very excited, as I did when I was in my 20s, about waking up in the morning and having the opportunity to do things that I love doing. And I think at the moment I'm working on two TV series I'm scoring for, and which I really good, and I'm really enjoying doing that. I'm due to be playing with Jules Holland and a whole load of people at the Royal Albert Hall on Tuesday, which is to raise money to combat prostate cancer, which my father died of. And I'm also working on a whole range of other projects, which I think there's lots of them. But the point is, it's not really about those. It's about the fact that I have a lovely situation in that I wake up and every day is different and every day is challenging and exciting and feels full of possibility and allows me to make music that I want to make.
Thank you. I think that's a great note to end on.
Yes, it is.
Cool.
But
thank you so
but
much.
Knitting. What was David like at school?
He's lovely. He's very nice. I'm going to just keep. I can't change my answer depending on the tone okay. You ask the question.
What was he like just after school?
He's always been great. And also, you know what? If you want me to go into detail, he was always really funny. And the thing is, that's one of the things that I think you can only really be very funny if you are. And genuinely funny, anecdotally and observationally funny, if you're somebody who's got empathy with others. I really think that the people who make me laugh are the people who have empathy with others and are astute. And also the thing is, it's interesting that he quotes, because he was very good. I remember I'd read his essays. I know how he writes.
Yeah, you did copy my essays, didn't you?
But the thing about that is that he's very good at... He's got a great memory for quotations, and he does learn from everything he reads very well. So I think he's still got that quality now, it seems.
He certainly does.
Thank you for that, Nitin. Yeah. We did have some good laughs there, and it's wonderful to reconnect with you.
Yeah, always. Yeah, yeah. That's great to see.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being with us today, Nitin. And
cheers.
Bringing your stories and openness and honesty.
Oh, thanks for that. Thank you very much, guys. That was really enjoyable.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Take care.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you, Nitin.
See you soon.
Have a good day. Bye.
Hey, listener. It's Stefano here. Since you got until here, we think that you might like the podcast. It would mean so much if you could leave us a 5-star review and share this with as many of your friends as possible. This will help us be discovered and spread the news. Can you just take 5 minutes and do that for us? Thank you.